Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Captain Hunter's Podcast. Another great episode coming at you today. Another controversial episode, but I think that you as a listener are ready to listen to what we have to talk about today. Hope that it's going to be very engaging and hope that you pass this information along and let other people know about what we're talking about, what we're doing over here at Captain Hunter's Podcast. Spread the news, spread the word around. That way we can all join the conversation. We can all be a part of the solution and not part of the problem. So that's what we want to do today. Today we're going to talk about something that's also, again, very controversial. We're going to talk about the training in different countries. Now, as I was dealing with this topic and researching this topic and talking about training in different countries, as comparison to how police are trained in this country, of course, I came across a number of different tributaries, I want to say, different items that cause us to kind of go down these different rabbit holes. So I won't be talking about training that much, but we will talk about it initially. So let's get into it. So what's the reason that I wanted to talk about this particular subject? I want to talk about this particular subject because I saw a meme that was going around on the internet. It was very viral, where it talked about how police officers were trained in other European countries, Norway, Sweden, Finland, places like that. And how come the police are over there in those countries are able to take their citizens into control, and many of the police officers are not trained or not carrying around with a firearm, not walking with a firearm, and everything like that. So there's a vast difference in how they are trained and what is expected of their police officers. So I really wanted to get into that, really wanted to delve into that and look and see, number one, are these claims true that there's a vast difference in the way that American police officers are trained in comparison to other, particularly European countries, and I would include Canada and Australia, Finland, England, Wales, places like that in the middle of the conversation. So that's what we want to deal with today. So let's get into it. So I came across an article in The Contrarian. Now, The Contrarian is, I guess, some news outlet. I never really heard of it, but that's irrelevant. I think that the article fairly good and attempts to look at these claims that there's a vast difference in the way that American police are trained and the way that Norway's, in this particular case, Norway's police are trained. I'm just going to read to you. This article is from 2016. I just want to really kind of highlight some of the things that I thought were important enough for our particular conversation today. It starts about halfway through this article. It starts off with, for starters, the comparison between Norway and the United States is challenging considering the differences in police structures. The Norwegian police service is highly centralized. There is only one police organization compared to the United States, which is a highly decentralized police system. The United States has federal, state, county, and municipal law enforcement agencies, all of which function semi-autonomously. So I think that this particular sentence is extremely telling, and we're going to get into a number of this. I may come back to this article from The Contrarian in 2016. The title of the article is The Truth About Norwegian Police. You guys can read it at your own leisure in case I don't get back to it in this. I really kind of want to just have a nice, decent conversation today and not really give a lot of reading and all that kind of stuff. You don't tune into me to really get a lecture, I don't think. I really think you want a captain's perspective about what's going on. So let's talk about this, and let's talk about what goes on in different police organizations. Now, as this particular article does point out, is that the American system of policing is very fragmented, right? It's very semi-autonomous. Now, the only places that we can agree upon, and I say we as police officers from all across the country, whether you live in Maine or Oregon or California or Florida, in all points in between all these different places, you are guided by the United States Constitution and the court decisions which try to explain and interpret those particular, what the founding fathers of this particular country meant and had in mind, particularly in this places of how law enforcement or how the government should be interfering in people's lives. So that's what I really want to deal about. So let's talk a little bit about how the American justice system or how the American criminal justice system came into play, because we're not going to get anywhere unless we really begin to talk about some things. I believe, and I truly believe this, many of the problems that we have in this country are really race-based. I mean, when you start boiling away a lot of the arguments, a lot of the sentiments, a lot of the opinions, and you really start looking at things, we really have a difference of opinion about along racial lines. And I think that that's terrible. And I think that if we need to, number one, realize that, and understand, number two, how do we fix that? How do we become one country? One thing that President George W. Bush said was that we share a continent, but we don't share a country. I think that that was very profound, and I think that that is very problematic. We share a continent. We are all in this place and all in this space together, but we're not in the same accord. We're not going to the same place. And it seems as if we're intentionally, and maybe even unintentionally, going backwards. When we look at And I did read a bunch of Mueller report. I am actually continuing to read that right now. But one of the things that was very profound is the Russian infiltration and their use of Facebook. If anybody has read the report, then they know exactly what I'm talking about. 129 million people. Now, this country has roughly 330, 340, 350, something like that. 350 million people, somewhere around those numbers, whatever the estimates are. If we can ever get a true and proper calculation of how many people actually are supposed to be here, are here legally and illegally. Well, that's a conversation for another day. And maybe I'll do an episode about how I feel about immigration, because I think that is actually a law enforcement issue. So matter of fact, I will plan to do that. Let me just get back to what I was talking about here, the Mueller report. What I think about this particular report in the Facebook numbers is that 129 million people were intentionally fragmented for the 2016 election. Facebook posts were intentionally put up to cause distraction, dissemination of disinformation concerning what's going on. There were Russian groups, Russian government groups, that were intentionally putting up information about Black Lives Matter, intentionally putting these posts up in order to spark division and debate amongst the American people, and engaged in actual protests or arrangement of protests concerning the Confederate statues that we see going on. So much of this problems that we see concerning Black Lives Matter, Confederate statues, is really instigated by the Russian government. Now think about that. Think about that. This is all in the Mueller report. This is not just me talking. This isn't some wild conspiracy theory. 129 million people. As a matter of fact, for a long time, I decided to stay off of Facebook because it was just too much racism going on. People that you work with, people that you saw in the stores, people that you went to high school with or college with, and they're posting things that you didn't agree with. Let me say, not that they're posting things, but they're reposting things. They're retweeting things and ideas that other people put up, right? These other groups put up. That were put up with the direct intent of creating divide amongst this country. We are the United States of America. We have our problems and our history, and whatever problems and histories that we have, we need to solve them, and we need to recognize and realize that when we're being had, we're being duped and we're being misled. And so I think that that is something that we really need to understand and really come to terms with, is that much of the problems that we're facing today, much of the divide that we have as a country today, is all a plot of the Russian government. Now, one of the biggest reasons I got back onto Facebook and other social media platforms is because of the business that I have going. I don't know, I didn't announce it at the beginning, but I still have and still operating under HunterPoliceTraining.com, where I'm helping officers take promotional tests. So make sure you hit me up if you need my services and assistance at HunterPoliceConsulting@gmail.com. I really want to kind of focus in on what we're talking about here. So that's what we're talking about here, is this a plot to make us sure that we are divided. And one of the ways that we are divided along these racial lines is amongst our police force. Depending on where you live, what your zip code is, what your economic financial status is, will determine how and what you think about law enforcement and their application of the use of force and their application of the law and their application of different tactics in their solving of crimes and their attempts to interrogate and interpret the laws of their jurisdiction and their application thereof. What am I saying? When I'm talking about this, what I'm saying is that we really have to take a close, hard look at how this American justice system, as it exists in 2019, how we understand that it formed, right? Because if the foundation of any house is wrong, then the ceiling, the roof, the doors, the windows, the floors throughout the building will be off. So the foundation has to be off. So we know, and this is an uncomfortable conversation, and I don't like having to go there all the time. I really want to be able to talk about other things and many times, but we have to understand this. And we have to understand that the roots of this particular tree were buried in the blood of Native Americans and of Africans. Fast forward through its establishment, we fast forward through time to the slave patrols, and we understand as police forces began to grow out of former night watches that were concerned about businesses in the North particularly, and then they grew into the slave catching patrols that were what? They were interested in both entities, whether it's North with their business interests, the night watchmen and their business interests, making sure the burglars weren't around, making sure the buildings weren't burning down, the business interests, and second of all, the slave patrols. All of this was built around the function of police officers engaging, or those particular officials at the time, engaging in operations which protected the status and class of the wealthy. Let's pause for effect right now. So our police forces, modern day police forces, are built off of a system that was really built or perpetuated by classes of people that wanted to maintain power and maintain their privilege and maintain, make sure that their businesses didn't burn down and that their property did not run away. And so that was the foundation of this. And so then we fast forward through Jim Crow era. The Jim Crow era takes us to the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, in which black people, particularly in the 50s and 60s, began to get better jobs, began to do better economically, and they wanted to move out of the places that they were redlined into and move out of the ghettos. And once they started to move out of the ghettos, they wanted to leave the South, things like that. Then this is when many of the problems arise. This is when you get riots in Cleveland and New York, New Jersey, Chicago. We get riots all over the place because black people wanted to come in and start getting equal paying jobs. They wanted everything else that everybody else was enjoying. So the very good article that needs to be read about this is in time.com called How the U.S. Got Its Police Force. Article was written in 2017 by Olivia B. Waxman. Very good article. I really think that people really ought to read that. And this really just goes over exactly what I talked about. Also, as I mentioned in other previous podcasts, there's a book that everyone needs to read by Christian Williams called Our Enemies in Blue, Police and Power in the United States. Really check that book out. I really think that between that book and this article, which really talks, or this article from time.com, how the U.S. got its police force, really is an eye-opening experience as to the foundation, how everything came about. Let me just read a little bit from this article. Policing in colonial America had been very informal, based on a for-profit, privately funded system that employed people part-time. Towns also commonly relied on the night watch, in which volunteers signed up for a certain day and time, mostly to look out for fellow colonists engaging in prostitution or gambling. Boston started one in 1636, New York followed in 1658, and Philadelphia created one in 1700. But that system wasn't very efficient because a watchman often fell asleep and drank while on duty, and there were people who were put on watch duty as a form of punishment. Going down further in the article, in cities, increasing urbanization rendered the night watch system completely useless as communities got too big. The first publicly funded organized police force with officers on duty full-time was created in Boston in 1838. Boston was a largely shipping commercial center, and businesses had been hiring people to protect their property and safeguard the transportation of goods from Port of Boston to other places, says Potter. These merchants came up with a way to save money by transferring the cost of maintaining a police force to citizens by arguing that it was for the collective good. You guys can read all about all that. This continues to talk about how the merchants no longer wanted to pay for it and wanted to keep the money in the pocket, so therefore they got the government to pay for it and said it's for everybody's good. Read that, and I think that is really very eye-opening. Along the same lines, when it talks about increasing urbanization rendered the night watch completely useless as communities got too big, Christian's book, Our Enemies in Blue, talked about the fragmentation that was going on. Different communities were able to police themselves, right? So if you had a community that was overwhelmingly Irish all living together, the Germans all lived together, all these different immigrant groups living together, then you had different forms of punishment, i.e. they could cast you out, things like that. So they had their own form of punishment. But as Germans moved in, and if a Germans somehow wronged the Irish, amongst the fighting that would go on, then it became difficult because there was different cultural codes that each group had, and different methods of punishing different people did not apply equally. So therefore, the book points out that it was in the public's best good, in public's best interest, to make sure that there was one system, the state, which controlled all these different people. So this is just the foundation of it. So I really wanted to continue on pressing on. Now, there was a meme that was going on where it talks about the cops in Norway. They acquired 3 years of training and they killed 4 people since 2002. Cops in Finland had 2 years of training, 7 people killed since 2000 in the U.S. Cops in Iceland, 2 years of training, 1 person killed ever. So this is a meme that's going on. The meme continues on with the police in America, or U.S. cops, require 21 weeks of training, 8,000 people killed since 2001. What is this saying? This is saying that these Nordic countries, these European countries, I would also include Canada, Australia, are having far more training. Therefore, the result is that there is such a difference in the murder rate. And they're looking for reasons as to why this is going on. Why is that happening? Why are all these different countries having more training and killing less people? And second of all, is the claim even true? Now, Snopes.com attempted to do a fact-checking concerning the meme and all that was going on. It looked at the simple fact that Norway does require 3 years of training. Snopes.com, fact check, Police Killings USA, Dagnordic is the website where I'm reading this from. Police Training and Police Killings USA versus the Nordic Country. This was written in September 2018. It talks about Norway requires 3 years of training. This is true. Four people killed since 2000. True. This is also true. Finland requires 2 years of training. This is mostly true. Here's what's required in Finland. In fact, a three-year bachelor's degree is required to become a police officer in Finland. Seven people killed since 2000. It says mostly true. A spokeswoman from the National Police in Finland provided a list of nine fatalities attributed to police between 2000 and 2018. However, one of those nine deaths involved a taser, and another involved a police officer accidentally shooting a prison guard. So seven members of the public were killed, all shot dead due to actions taken by police in Finland since 2000. Iceland requires 2 years of training. They said this is true. It says one person killed ever. This is also true. Multiple news articles corroborate this claim that only one person in Iceland has ever been killed by police there. The United States requires 21 weeks of training. Going back to the contrarian again, in the truth about the Norwegian police, right? So this is Norway's police. They require 3 years of training. But this particular article really seeks to look at the comparisons and why these comparisons are not true. As I mentioned in Our Enemies in Blue, that particular article, right, it talks about the diverse population of the United States. The diverse population in the United States, everyone doesn't operate under the same cultural codes, and therefore we need to have better understanding of what each other cultures requires in order to effectively cause for cohesiveness in unity in thought and mind and in our actions and reactions when out in the public. So this takes increased training by police officers to be able to understand and to articulate what is going on in different cultures and be able to respond effectively and accordingly with all that they're doing. I read from Snopes, I read from The Contrarian a little bit. Now I want to read a very good article that I think in the HuffPost.com, written 2015. The title of this article is Why American Cops Kill So Many Compared to European Cops. This is by contributor Paul Hirschfeld from Rutgers University. He lists three items that are causing this. Number one, more guns and aggression. In other words, what is the United States doing differently? Why is the United States so different from the Nordic countries that we listed? Iceland, Finland, etc., etc. So what's the difference? According to this university professor, one of the big things is more guns and aggression. Let me read to you a little bit about this. Such massive disparities defy a simple explanation, but America's gun culture is clearly an important factor. Unlike European nations, most states make it easy for adults to purchase handguns for self-defense and to keep them handy at nearly all times. Right, so the police in America, every time, and I can tell you this as an absolute fact, when I went through my police academy, and I'm sure that as I continue reading on, every police officer is told this, that every single person that you deal with has the potentiality of being armed. This was the ingrained in our thought process. It was buried deep within our psyche. They called it the plus one rule back in 1995 when I went to the police academy. The plus rule was that when I showed up on the scene, there was already one gun present, right? My gun. But there was a possibility that there was another gun in the house. There's a possibility that when I pull someone over, that there's another gun. So it's always, we were always operating under the plus one rule. And this is exactly what this professor is talking about in this HuffPost article, that there's more guns and the availability of guns. Therefore, there's a certain tension, fear, call it what you want, that goes on the hairs in the back of one's neck and an officer's mind, that their guard is up and they're more antsy because they know that the potential, that the person that they're dealing with has the potentiality of being harmed. I just watched today a viral video that was from March 1st, 2019, the Boulder, Colorado police officer who had this long standoff. I think it was like 10 minutes long or so. This Boulder, Colorado police officer was dealing with this particular suspect who was picking up trash outside his own residence. Now the officer, to be fair, did not know that this particular person lived at this particular scene, but the officer's aggression, the officer's presence, the officer's demeanor, how the officer addressed this particular individual is what's told to him and ingrained in him in these different police academies. This officer is dealing with this particular individual in a very hostile manner. She tries to be all nice about it, but listen, in Colorado, do you have to show ID? Do you have to acquiesce? Watch the video. The officer's telling the man to sit down, put down his trash picker upper device that he had and said it could have been used against him as a weapon. It's really quite ridiculous. It really is ridiculous, and I hope that the officer was embarrassed. I know that the town was embarrassed, because it was really a shame, and it's really an embarrassment. Listen, I talk about all the time about the police perception problem. This is a perception problem. How the situation should have been handled. Let me articulate that. You go up to someone, you notice, as a police officer did, that the person that you want to deal with is in a place where he possibly should not have been. There were no trespassing signs. The officer sees this man walking around this building that has no trespassing signs. Okay, he goes up to him and asks him, you know, his name. Hey, what are you doing here? You know, we've been getting the calls about what's going on here. There's no trespassing sign in the back. All this is good, right? No, I have no issues with any of this. Second of all, here's where it starts to go downhill. Please watch the video and maybe play this as you're looking at the video so you can understand exactly what I'm seeing and what I'm saying. Once the man identifies himself, says he lives in the building, that really should have been the end of the conversation, particularly when the officer starts asking for his name, for his date of birth, he wants to identify him, I don't know who you are. Listen, you don't have the right to do any of that. You have to understand that you, as a police officer, and this is where we're talking about, I really don't want to get ahead of myself here, but you really have to understand that there are limitations to what you can and cannot do. There are limitations according to the Constitution of the United States, and as well as individual states' constitutions, as well as different operating procedures, policies, procedures, departmental rules and regulations of each and every individual department, of how you can approach people and who you can and cannot detain. Unless you have reasonable suspicion and or probable cause, which is a higher rung, higher degree of certainty about a crime being afoot, a crime being committed, then you cannot detain someone. So in this particular case, does this officer have a reasonable suspicion that this person should not be in this particular area? No, he doesn't. People walk around everywhere at all times. They cut through parking lots. Can people cut through parking lots? Unless that officer has certain knowledge that this person does not belong in this place at this time, then you can ask the question, but you cannot stop them. There is a difference between stopping someone, restricting their freedom to move, and there's a difference between just asking the question. You can go up to any person at any time, in any place as a police officer, wearing a uniform, ask someone for their name, ask someone for their license, ask someone for whatever. But the fact that someone doesn't want to give you their license, doesn't want to identify themselves, does not necessitate the fact that they are now breaching your peace, failing to comply with the lawful orders of a police officer, that they're failing to provide identification, and all that kind of stuff. Police officers have to operate within legal boundaries in which they are given. And in this particular case, the man didn't. He did not know for certain and for sure, number one, that the crime was afoot. He wasn't sure about that. He had a suspicion. He was just checking someone out, that because there was no trespassing signs, and he saw someone who he thought in his mind, for whatever reason, was suspicious. And that, the mindset is what has to change. You cannot think that someone is walking around in the place is automatically suspicious. They may be picking up trash. Unless you see, now what is suspicious behavior? So what could this man have been doing that would have been deemed suspicious? I'm so glad you asked that. If he's looking in the cars, if he's looking at people's windows, if he's trying different doors, trying to get into the place, then those are, now you see this no trespassing sign, and you see coupled with that, you see these different behaviors of acting suspicious. As soon as you see the police, you turn and run. As soon as you see this individual trying different doors in the neighborhood, trying different doors on cars, he's got a device in his hand, which could be used to jimmy open doors and things like that. So you have to be able to articulate that. Walking around in a certain place and then is not in and of itself a reason to stop someone. You can ask anyone a question at any time. I hope that's clear about what I'm saying. I got off on this tangent. I went down on this road because I want to talk about this aggression, the police officer, and these more guns, according to this HuffPost article. We have more guns. So therefore, this causes people, or causes officers in particular, to be more defensive. Because I don't know if this man has a gun. Back to this Boulder, Colorado police officer. He didn't know if this man had a gun. What he did know is he had a bucket, and he did know that he had that one of those long claw type devices which people can use to pick up trash and things like that. That's what he had in his hand. That's what the officer knew for sure because he could see it. He didn't know if the man was armed and had a gun in his waist. And so because you don't know that, now your attention is spiked. Now your attention and your compliance meter is going off the rails. And what do I mean by that? So now this man is insulted. Because this man, being the Boulder, Colorado person, is operating under this mindset that he's being targeted. Of course, the man is African-American. he's now operating under the mindset that he's being targeted. He told the officer his name, gave the officer his identification for the school that he went to. So that was a form of identification. He gave this to him and that wasn't good enough. Now he feels as if he's being targeted. I told you where I live. I gave you my name and now you're targeting me. Now you want my date of birth. So this becomes a defense mechanism to the person. Meanwhile, at the same time, a defense mechanism rises in the police officer. The police officer says, why isn't this man complying with my authority? He sees him plainly clothed in police uniform. I'm asking this man for something and he's refusing to give it to me. As we are taught in the police academy, someone who's failing to comply has many times something to hide. And that's just not the case, particularly in this case. It's not the case. We have to watch what we're doing and watch what we're saying and watch where we're going. And watch what we're doing as police officers. Now this man is failing to comply. Now the officer's tension's going up. Now this man's tension's going up. And now this escalation of problems is rising on both sides. So, and now we're at this impasse. The officer's telling the man to drop this stuff. Why? Drop this stuff, meaning the claw and the bucket in which the man is holding. Why is he telling him to drop that? Well, because it could be used as a dangerous instrument against him. He draws his taser at first, and he draws his gun. And as the man says, you're really going to shoot me because I'm picking up trash? The officer says, yeah, if you try to attack me with that thing. This is the training that police officers are getting. So his training is kicking in, that anything and everything could be used against you. And that we have this hyper-vigilant training that is part of the problem, in all honesty. And I'm going to get to a little bit more of this later on. And so this is going on. This situation continues to escalate in both of their minds. And now the officer, remember that plus one rule I talked about, the officer doesn't know if this man is armed. Why is this man not complying? Why is he not dropping down? I'm telling the man to sit down. He won't sit down on the curb. Everything like that. So this is where things go off the rails. Right, so let me move on. Knife violence is a big problem in England, yet British police have fatally shot one person wielding a knife since 2008, and that was a hostage taker. By comparison, his calculations based on data compiled by fatalencounters.org and the Washington Post show that US police have fatally shot more than 575 people allegedly wielding blades and other such weapons in the year since 2013. Racism helps explain why African Americans and Native Americans are particularly vulnerable to police violence. Racism, along with a prevailing ideology of individualism and limited government, helps explain why white citizens and legislators give so much support to controversial police shootings and aggressive police tactics and so little to criminals and poor people. Second reason, according to this HuffPost, so number one, we got this guns and aggression, right? Guns and aggression. I just demonstrated, I think, what that aggression is. In the case in point of the Colorado officer. Second point is racism. Here, the professor goes on to say, but racism alone can't explain why non-Latino white Americans are 26 times more likely to die by gunfire than Germans. And racism alone doesn't explain why states like Montana, West Virginia, and Wyoming, where both perpetrators and victims of deadly force are almost always white, exhibit relatively high rates of police lethality. An explanation would be found in a key distinguishing characteristic of American policing, its localism. Each of America's 15,000 county departments, municipal and county departments, is responsible for screening applicants, imposing discipline, and training officers when a new weapon like tasers are adopted. So this localism, back to this Contrarian article, when he talks about, the Contrarian article talked about it, and the Snopes article talked about it that I read before. This localism, right? There's no central guiding principle and factor, no central governing body, essentially, that governs all the police work. So you can live in Maine, be operating in one particular state of department rules, regulations, state governance. You can then go on vacation to Arizona and get pulled over, and everything can be completely different. The police tactics are different. When they can and cannot draw their weapons are different. Who can be tased, who cannot be tased, and everything like that. So this lack of cohesiveness is a problem. And the only time that we get any type of overarching type of guidance is when there's a tragedy and everything goes up before the Supreme Court. And those, for example, are cases like Tennessee versus Garner, things like that. Those types of examples are when officers can use force. To make matters worse, and this is where I really have a problem, to make matters worse, cash-strapped local governments like Ferguson, Missouri, may see tickets, fines, impounding fees, and asset forfeitures as revenue sources and push for more involuntary police encounters. If you haven't read an article called The Making of Ferguson, you really need to read that. Public Policies at the Root of Its Troubles, 2014. the Economic Policy Institute by Richard Rothstein. Read that article. Also, the Washington Post did another article, 2014 in November, How Ferguson Became Ferguson, The Real Story. You really need to read these articles because it talks about what happened concerning the Michael Brown case. Now, I'm not going to talk about, yes, Michael Brown was wrong. Let me just put that out there. There was no hands up and all that kind of stuff, and that's all fine. But the problem was that particular incident, the Michael Brown incident, was a straw in the camel's back. The black people there, overwhelmingly 70-75% of the population, were targeted by the government, by the local government there, and by surrounding governmental agencies, right? So you had all these different towns like Ferguson, Missouri, and outlying towns who you drove through one town, drove through Ferguson, you get a ticket for a broken headlight. The next town over would give you the same thing. And then you had a certain amount of time to fix it. There's no jobs, so you couldn't fix it. So now the fines double and triple. You get lawyer's fees and all this kind of stuff. And next thing you know, you're doing asset forfeiture. And there was just a compounding problem. Read those articles. It really breaks down the problem and the overwhelming burden that not only this HuffPost article mentions, but it really breaks it down until you can understand what was going on in Ferguson. The cities and towns should not be targeting their own citizens for a source of revenue. That's just crazy that goes on. So read those articles. So that's the second thing that this particular thing, going back to the HuffPost article. Number one, we had the thought process is that there's such a difference in why there's so many more American killings of its citizens by the police officers in comparison to these European countries. The first reason was there's just more guns in the street. So therefore the aggression, the hypervigilance of the officers comes into play. And this is where we get that I was scared defense, right? The officers go there and say, I saw a wallet in his hand, it was dark, I was scared, I was in fear for my life because this guy might have had a gun, so therefore I didn't take a chance. And this kind of crazy nonsense is what goes over. And these guys are getting off from it. They're getting off. And I don't agree with that at all. I don't agree with that at all. You got to be sure about that. And just as a side note, just recently, California just passed a bill making it more, it wasn't as strict as the legislators wanted it, but they worked with police leaders, different police, pro-police agencies, and they came up with a compromise. Neither group, the legislatures nor the police advocacy groups, are exactly happy, but it's a step in the right direction. We in California is one of the biggest perpetrators of people being killed and officers getting off because they're just saying, oh, listen, I was scared. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. So number one, back to the HuffPost article, we had there's more guns in the street, raising the ire, raising the attention, raising the fearfulness of the officer. Number two, we just have the racism. Ferguson, Missouri is a good example of it. You got all these different encounters. People are getting sick of it. But it's not just racism alone, as we talked about. Montana, West Virginia, Wyoming, people are getting killed by the police because there's these guns out there, and this is part of the problem. He talks about there being a different standard. A different standard is also what goes on in the Nordic countries than here in America. By contrast, national standards in most European countries conform to the European Convention on Human Rights, which impels its 47 signatories to permit only deadly force that is absolutely necessary to achieve a lawful purpose. Absolutely necessary to achieve a lawful purpose. Killings, excuse under America's reasonable belief standard, often violates Europe's absolute necessity standards. So this is the problem. There's just a different standard. And so we need to change our standard. And that's what California is seeking to do and has done. I think that they need to go a little bit further. And I think that all states need to follow. But this is a different standard. The use of deadly force has to be the last act. You must be certain that the person who you're dealing with and who you are approaching is armed, has a gun, not a screwdriver, which I do admit can kill you, not a wallet, not a cell phone, not credit cards, not any other non-dangerous instrument. You must be sure about that. As a police officer, I didn't pull my gun every single time I pulled over a car. I didn't unsnap my belt clip. I didn't do any of that. I don't understand this fearfulness is emboldened, and it's authorized by these states and local governments. I think it's terrible. In the U.S., only 8 states require verbal warnings when possible, while warning and leg shots are typically prohibited. In stark contrast, Finland and Norway require that police obtain permission from a supervisor whenever possible before shooting anyone. Not only do centralized standards in Europe make it easier to restrict police behavior, but centralized training centers efficiently teach police officers how to avoid using deadly weapons. The Netherlands, Norway, and Finland, for example, require police to attend a national academy, a college for cops, for 3 years. In Norway, over 5,000 applicants recently competed for 700 annual spots. 3 years affords police ample time to learn to better understand, communicate, and calm distraught individuals. By contrast, in 2006, U.S. Police Academy provided an average of 19 classroom for introduction. 2019, it's way more than that. About 20, well, it's not way more, 22, 25, depending on what state you're in. So this is the problem. Number one, we have there's more guns, so cops can claim that more scared defense. Number two, racism. People are not used to being around other people, but racism alone doesn't explain what's going on in mostly white communities where white officers are killing white citizens. And then three, there's just a different standard, and I think that standard needs to be raised. How would I deal with any of these particular problems? Number one, I would have more training on racism. I think our academies need to be longer. I think that there's numerous research that says that the more educated officers are, then they're just better officers. They're less likely to use force, less likely to use lethal force. We could address more cultural diversity if we had more time to train individuals. I think that the gun problem is really a big issue. I obviously carry a gun most times and all times, but I only carry one because I know other people are carrying it. I do wish that I lived in a place where we didn't have to worry about such things, but we do have to worry about such things. I don't just like having a gun on my hip just because I like having a gun on my hip. I have a gun on my hip because somebody else has a gun on their hip, and I don't want to be a victim. So that's why I carry. But I personally don't want to carry and don't like carrying. I'm not a big gun person. But I think that we ought to be able to protect ourselves and have that right. Another article I really want to read to you guys is this by Seth Stalton, 2014. It talks about how police training contributes to avoidable death. Now, this is another article. This guy, Seth Stalton, sure, he's an academic, teaches at the University of South Carolina. He wrote an article for The Atlantic, which I just read, how police training contributes to avoidable death. He talks about the training period. The problem is the training. So let me just read a little bit from this article. In most police shootings, officers don't shoot out of anger or frustration or hatred. They shoot because they are afraid. And they're afraid because they're constantly barraged with messages that they should be afraid, that their survival depends on it. Not only do officers hear it in their formal training, they also hear it informally from supervisors and older officers. They talk about it with their peers. They see it in the police forums and law enforcement publications. For example, three of the four stories mentioned on the cover of this month's Police magazine are about dealing with threats to officer safety. Officers' actions are grounded in their expectations, and they are taught to expect the worst. The officers who shot John Crawford may have honestly believed that he was raising his rifles to a shooting position, even though security camera footage shows him on the phone, casually swinging the BB gun back and forth. The same may be true of the Phoenix officer who shot an unarmed man because he thought, mistakenly, that the suspect had a gun in his waistband. The officers saw what they were afraid of. They saw that they were trained to see. They did what they had been taught to do. That's the problem. Another excellent, excellent article. This man was a former police officer. He goes through a lot of statistical data from the FBI. Read that article, how police training contributes to avoidable death. He says it's the training in and of itself in the United States. So this is the problem that we're dealing with. The problem is, number one, that there's a different standard of training. The problem is racism. It's not only racism, right? White on white officers are killing other people, and the fact that police officers are trained to be afraid. The standard is changing. It's different in Europe, but Americans are not willing to give up their guns. And that is the whole racist idea in and of itself, in my opinion. The whole gun culture, in my opinion, and my estimation, is a racist idea. Maybe I'll talk about that in another episode as well. So I'm going to cut it off for right now. So what can we do? Let me just talk about what we can do. We can stand behind bills like AB 392 out of California. From the LA Times, this article says the police use of force bill advances after California law enforcement agrees to changes. Read through that article. It really, really breaks it down. Understand what's going on. Understand how these people want to change some ideas. So that's the first thing we can do. Stand behind bills like that. Understand what's going on in Europe. We can make changes into adjustment. Second of all, I think that our training needs to be longer and better. In many places, you have to have a college degree. Australia, you do not have the college degree. As a matter of fact, they're one of the shorter weeks. They have to have minimum training of 24 weeks. So here's what I think. Number one, let me just put this in context so we can have some kind of formulation and remember this. Number one, I think that we need to have longer and better training. Longer and better training is at least maybe a college degree, associate's degree at minimum, longer training, cultural diversity training, de-escalation type training. I'm all in favor of all those types of training. Number two, I think that we have to deal with a racism problem, and I would include the gun culture in that as well. I think that it's almost entirely a racist idea that certain people are just going to come over and ravage us and take what you have and ravage you and take what you have and all kind of crazy nonsense like that. So I think that we have to deal with that and be honest about it and say, hey, listen, I don't like other people. I'm not scared of other people and all that. I think that we have to address the type of training that police officers are getting. A Seth Stoughton University professor down in South Carolina, I think that we really have to look at what our officers are being trained and taught. I think we need to change the standard to a more higher standard. We need to make sure that our police officers know what they're doing. And the I'm scared defense should no longer work anymore. I'm scared. Listen, you're a police officer. You're supposed to be brave. You took the badge. You took the gun. You said you went through the training, and being scared should not be a problem. I think we need to deal with our gun culture, deal with the training, deal with our length of training, educate our officers better, deal with our racism problems. And I think we need to stand behind bills and any other bills that would seek to protect people and make sure that the police officers are held accountable. So in comparison, yes, the training is longer. We need to look at what's going on over in Europe, see what they're doing, and see how we can make things better here, adapt those principles that work and those principles that don't work. Finally, I think that we do need to have some type of centralized police academy, a national standard for everyone. Whether you live in Nebraska, or you live in Connecticut, or you live in Minnesota, or you live in Texas, or you live in California, you are a U.S. citizen. This type of divided, separated mentalities of localism is really very destructive. You can live one way in California, go to the other side of the country in Virginia, and have a totally different set of rules and regulations. And I think this needs to be looked at, and we need to have a national standard of what our police officers should do, a national way of hiring every single police officer. A police officer who, as in the East Pittsburgh police shooting, leaves one department, gets hired by another department, gets sworn in, and 4 hours later shoots someone in the back who's running away and gets away with it is ridiculous. And I think that we really, really need to have a national conversation about this. I want to start the conversation, and I really want us to take a look at what we're doing. And as Seth Stoughton says, it's the training that is the problem. Our laws are not strict enough. We give too much leniency to police officers. We give too much deference to their word, and all they have to say is, I was scared. And listen, I'm a police officer, and I'm totally behind them 100% of the way, but I'm not going to stand behind anyone or anything that I think is wrong. And I think that we need to take a look. When things can progress and do better, we do better. We did things the old way. Talked about in the beginning about the roots of how we got to this problem, American policing, the foundation of it, and now we have to take a look and see where we're at right now. So this is where we're at right now, and we need to do something about it. Unfortunately, California may be leading the way, and I hope that everything works out in their favor. And police officers just need to know what they're doing. You just need to know what you're doing, know what you can and can't do, know the Constitution, know your state's Constitution, know your policies, procedures, and live by them and obey them. And you won't have any issues or problems. I don't think this is what the public is asking of our officers is all that crazy. So, and I'm in agreement with that. Now, I hope this didn't seem like too much of a bashing session against police officers, because I enjoyed my time in the career, and I certainly wouldn't trade it in for the world. But I think that some things need to change. So that's it for now, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you appreciate it. Let me know what I'm doing right. Let me know what I'm doing wrong. Let me hear from you. Please send me an email. Hit me up on Twitter, Captain L. Hunter. Instagram, Big L. Hunter. Facebook, HunterPoliceTraining.com. My website, HunterPoliceTraining.com. Drop me a line. Let me know what you think. That's it for now, ladies and gentlemen. Take care. Until next time. If you have a show idea, let me know, and I will talk about it. That's it. I'll talk to you guys soon. Take care. We'll